Shrink Wrap Radio number 514, A Jungian Approach to Working with Adolescent Girls, with Arena Jackson, M.A.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today, my guest is Arena Jackson, M.A., therapist, youth worker, and author of Girls Rising, A Guide to Nurturing a Confident and Soulful Adolescent. For more information about Arena Jackson, please see our show notes on shrinkwrapradio.com. Before we go to the interview, let me mention that this week's featured article in The Neuropsychotherapist is The Psychotherapist's Essential Guide to the Brain, Part 4. OCD, Charlie's Web, The Impact of Life-Threatening Birth. You'll find it at neuropsychotherapist.com, which is the beautifully illustrated online monthly magazine for psychotherapists and anyone else interested in the intersection between the latest neuroscience findings and psychotherapy. I want you to go to neuropsychotherapist.com and get your free introductory issue today. And I'm hoping that will inspire you to support their superlative work by subscribing to it. Now, here's the interview. Arena Jackson, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Dr. Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And actually, we've been having a very interesting conversation up till this point. I had hoped to have you on video. We were going to do Skype video, and unfortunately, the quality of the link between us just wouldn't support it. So now we're doing Skype audio. Hopefully that will that will be good enough to see us through. And I really wish that people could see you on video. And so I want to urge them to, after they've listened to this interview, to look you up, Arena Jackson. That's U-R-A-N-A. Just search for that name on Skype, and they will see you and your lovely self. Mm. I'm especially pleased to have you on the show because I decided to interview you about your new book before discovering in a subsequent phone conversation with you that you're actually a longtime Shrink Wrap Radio listener.
I am. Big fan.
Yeah, so I was, you know, I was all ready to do it with a perfect stranger, but if you're a listener, I don't consider you a stranger.
Nor I. I'm a big fan I have to travel a lot through, you know, car, and so I just, it's just an automatic that I put Shrink Wrap on, so it's just such an honor to be on it myself then.
Yeah, well, I feel honored that you do that, and I was also delighted to discover that you did your master's work at Pacifica, and suddenly that made your book make a certain more kind of sense to me, because clearly you've been influenced by the Jungian perspective, so no wonder no wonder that your book resonated with me when I first thumbed through it. Not that it's in any, I mean, if a person were not of the Jungian persuasion, they would never guess that. There's nothing overt in here that says, oh, this is of the Jungian cult or whatever judgment someone might have.
That's right.
Yeah, so you've done a good job. But clearly there's a soulful and depthful kind of approach to the writing of your book. And this might be a good time for me to mention the title of your book, which has just come out, by the way. It's a 2016 book. And the title is Girls Rising, A Guide to Nurturing a Confident and Soulful Adolescent. So before we get into the book itself, tell us a bit about your background and, you know, how you got into all this.
So I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. And I mean, I think part of the impetus to do this work is that I was really just lucky to have certain spaces just growing up that really cultivated this idea of confidence and soulfulness in me. We lived three blocks away from the beach. And so I just really was able to access nature and specifically the ocean in this really deep way. I mean, it really penetrated me, and I think I learned relationship in some ways with nature at a very early age because of it. I think also my mother, she did a lot of soul searching, and she, you know, a lot of it was on a just kind of a spiritual quest. And so she kind of would drag me along, and I just got exposed at a really early age to a lot of different spiritual traditions within Los Angeles. And they're not contained in Los Angeles, but I just we were just kind of revolving around different spaces. And then also, you know, in my teenage years, we were going through a lot of difficulties, as many, you know, adolescents and their parents do. And she took us to a Jungian analyst.
Oh, interesting.
Right. And so I actually got a really deep perspective around myself and our relationship in my teenage years. And then also I participated in high school in this peer counseling class. And again, just provided a space that was really safe and allowed me to do, you know, some deeper work within a community. And so I think that was a real foundation for the work that I ended up doing with young people. I moved to the Bay Area about 20 years ago and started working with young people and didn't really think it was going to become necessarily a career. They have a resonancy that I just really gravitate to, their authenticity and just resilience. And I just began doing deeper and deeper work, and I found their capacity and desire to go deep. And that just kind of, again, it created the foundation for this larger work and this book.
Wow. It sounds like you've had an extraordinary growing up with some really unique opportunities. And, you know, maybe we're in a different world than when I grew up, and so there's more of this sort of thing around that you've described, which is great. I mean, in pockets of the culture, not everywhere, but there are these pockets of in the culture where a kid can grow up with a mother who's a spiritual seeker and who knows about Jungian psychology and so on, and so that's really a wonderful set of background opportunities. You're currently a marriage family therapy intern, but actually you've been doing, I gather you've been doing therapy for some time anyway,
yeah.
And you've had some very rich work background experiences prior to this. Maybe you can just quickly take us through those because they really lead into what you're doing now.
So I began doing kind of youth development work specifically with girls, and it began in San Francisco public housing. There was a after school academy for girls, and started doing wellness work around with them. And I did that for a few years, and then worked my way into juvenile hall and worked in the girls unit for a while. And, you know, kind of starting to create this idea of social emotional education within the units themselves. And then I got hired in Oakland, in one of the Oakland public high schools, to develop and run a conflict mediation program. And I did that. I trained some mediators, and we had a very successful program there. But I was realizing that the work itself was very intervention. It was an intervention and recovery kind of model. And there was nothing really being done on a kind of preventative level of just this, again, this idea of social emotional education. And so I just felt a need. I mean, two things were happening. I felt a need to get into the classroom and also to do some deeper work individually. And that's when I started my graduate work. And My internship was at the school, and so I was running kind of the mental health, one of the components of the mental health programs there, concurrently to running the conflict mediation program. But one of the other things that I did was join kind of forces with this social justice program that was at the time, it was an after-school program, and we eventually, and I can talk about that a little bit more, but we eventually got so popular, it became an elective course. And so the person that I was working with and who was originally running the program went through just this whole education around social political activism and awareness, and I did a lot of social emotional pieces. And so we did that for 9 years, and it was just an exceptional life transforming program. And it was really actually from that work that the book and the curriculum from the book is it really sprang from that place. And it's gotten honed a little bit more over the years, and this is now girl centered, but it's really from that work I did in the Oakland schools that this work is based from.
Yeah, it's interesting. You use the word curriculum, and I found that of interest as I was reading about the book and reading in the book, is that it's kind of a workbook, and it looks to me like it could be used by a group leader of some sort, but also be very readable for girls, for a girl, an individual girl to read, or for a girl to read and gather some of her friends and say, hey, let's have a club or to work on ourselves and use the book in that way. Who was your target audience as you put your book together?
Initially, it was for adults working with adolescent youth and adolescent girls specifically. So this is, you know, youth workers of all kinds, definitely therapists and educators. And then we added, or I added a piece, called The Parent Path. And so there's about 40 different activities and processes, and every one of them has a parent path so that parents could also initiate some of these exercises with their daughters. But I have also heard, you know, this idea of, it would have to be quite competent young girl, but yeah, girls reading this and creating their own groups based off of the curriculum itself. It's not really supposed to be individual work. This is really, it's evoking this idea of like working within community and working with a set of girls. So whoever's facilitating that is open. It could be an adult or it could be a girl facilitating it, but it is supposed to be to create community.
Okay, that's wonderful. So I really want to highlight for listeners out there who might be group leaders themselves of one stripe or another, that this could be a very, very useful resource, as you've hinted. It's filled with activities and ideas and structured kinds of activities. And so really this is a workshop or an ongoing process in a box, in a book. It's not in a box, but between two covers, that really would do a lot of the hard work for whoever's out there of having to dream stuff up. Right. This is already dreamed up for you, and all you need to do is get in it, get involved, and I'm sure you'd find it very rewarding in the same way that Irena has found it rewarding.
I think also, I think this is one of the issues, is that there is social emotional education out there, and some of it is strong and some of it is not, but a lot of it, folks charge, you know, a lot of money, hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars, so that you can have access to that social emotional education. I just really wanted to make this more democratic in that way, just really being able to have people access this for, I don't know how much this book is, like $20 or something, versus having to pay hundreds of dollars.
You're right, because I interviewed somebody else that came to mind as I was going through your material, mm-hmm. and remembering that, and this is not to put them down, they have a wonderful program too, But when I looked into the costs of the materials that they had,
right.
it was in the thousands, as you
say. Yes, it's prohibitive.
So it was assuming that there would be some parent organization that would say, yes, we want to bring this into our this kind of training into our organization, and that they would have deep enough pockets to cover that. But I don't know how many such situations there are. So
right.
it's really important that you've created this very, very affordable resource here. Now, backing up a little bit, you know, and maybe this has already been answered in what you've said, but I wondered, well, why a book for girls specifically rather than teens generally?
Oh, it's a good question. In truth, part of it was a publishing decision. I actually fought a little bit with the publishers around this fact.
Interesting.
Because this actually was created, and it wasn't gender specific, and I feel like it's just as important, if not more important, that males really get exposed to this kind of, you know, process. But I think, you know, outside of marketing, there is a propensity for girls to be more open to this type of exploration. And so I think that the publishers felt like there was more of a market there to put forward. And I just kind of gave in. But I make sure that when I do talk about this book that that people understand that it really can be accessed across the gender spectrum. And there are maybe three or four different exercises out of 40 that are specifically girl-centered, but the rest are pretty, you know, it's pretty, I mean, you could use these with males and females. You can use this with preteens. I've used this with adults and had some really deep processes with them. So this is really just very inclusive curriculum.
Well, it occurs to me as I hear you say that even, and I'm not in any religious context right now myself, but I could imagine this being used by church groups, and it wouldn't matter what, you know, what kind of church group it was. But anybody working with youth, even in a church or a synagogue or whatever, could probably make good use of this material, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one of my endorsers was a Reverend Dr. Karen Marie Houston. She does work with young people, and she just felt like this was good across whether secular or religious communities. They could both benefit from it. So.
Yeah.
I've heard that from the religious community, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the book, let's get into the book a little bit more. It's structured around six sections. One is getting started, two, looks within, three, empathetic attunement, four, necessary action, five, sacred living, and six, a closing ritual. And I thought maybe we could step through these with you telling us a bit about the intention of each section. Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe to call out a couple of your favorite exercises or activities in each section. So tell us about getting started. What's the message there or the intent?
So getting started is really just the preamble to the work. It's really getting facilitators starting. So it's talking about setting a tone and creating safe spaces, establishing guidelines, and just a word around the pedagogy itself, right? I mean, because we'll talk maybe a little bit about this, of just the initiatory kind of process that this takes young people through, and also just a note on spirituality and introducing that into the social emotional realm, which is not being done very often. So it's really just foundating what this work is and the kind of how to, right? So
yes.
And it's just the structures and like how this book is even structured of, you know, there's a musical accompaniment and there's a inspiration and the instructions and the discussion. I mean, it's just, it breaks everything down so that you understand how it works.
You know, I'm just realizing it kind of in a way reminds me of a Scoutmaster's manual. you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, et cetera. Not that it shares any resemblance other just kind of in the way of, you know, being somebody's going to be a group leader and it's addressing them and saying, okay, here's the kind of attitude that you want to strike.
Absolutely. It's setting the tone, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And the second section, which has a lot of activities and so on, is called Looks Within. So what's that one about? What is it that you're hoping to establish in that second section?
So the themes around Looks Within are really around self-awareness, self-identity, and self-esteem. And so what I'm doing is really having young girls look at how they identify themselves and then begin to look at the factors and the agents of which they perceive the world. So we're looking at media and their parents and their peers and their experiences and how all of these congregate together to form a lens of how they experience the world. I think this is pretty well, I mean, I'm sure for everybody that's listening, people get this, but I think young people aren't introduced to this until much later and probably into adulthood. So that we're perceiving reality through our own lens, through these different agents that have come together and created our reality. And I think that's important for young people to understand that they're seeing the world uniquely and subjectively. And it's also creating their identity. And so when they have more, you know, in some ways poisonous or dysfunctional agents and messages coming in, they're also building their reality off of that and their identity. So it creates a certain self-awareness around just who they are and how they're seeing the world. We also really focus on just the confluence between thoughts and feelings and how they create certain behaviors and realities. There's a piece or a couple pieces on just being able to manage and integrate really challenging emotions. And then there's a larger piece of just how to just to manage their, be able to like interpret reality through kind of more of a positive lens, right? So using a lot of positive psychology and giving them tools of how to do that.
Yeah, it looks like you've got about 14 activities in this section. Are there one or two that you're particularly fond of? I know you like them all.
I think, you know, the beauty import and export are really powerful ones, and the lifeline one, I mean, almost always just kind of has this really cathartic and self-revelatory experience for a lot of young people.
Well, tell us what those are about, the beauty import and beauty export. What does that involve?
Beauty export it's kind of a little bit long, but I'm going to just do like beauty export it's actually parallels a little bit. There's a Dove campaign and it's taken a little bit and modified from that. Mm-hmm. It's this idea. So, the girls have this, they have pictures of themselves and they're posted on the walls. And they go through this kind of visualization process, but then afterwards they go to each of the pictures and they have kind of stick it like notes, the sticky pad notes, and they write for the other girls just qualities about the person that they really admire or they really appreciate and that really stand out. And so each of the girls have, you know, surrounded this girl's picture with just all these different qualities that they acknowledge in the person. And so, and then there's this one moment.
And I'm sure that's has a huge impact on them because typically, not just girls, women, girls especially at that age, have a lot of negative self-judgments about their bodies and what they look like.
Absolutely.
Right? They're very self-conscious. And to suddenly get love bombed, if you will, with positive perceptions has got to really be a powerful experience for them.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen, you know, girls with tears just running down their eyes, just seeing their picture, their photo surrounded by all these acknowledgments of love. Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple exercise, and it's very powerful, and also creates this space where I think there's a girl culture that's very much in competition and envy and comparison, and it starts breaking that down and really just seeing other young girls as allies and you know, young people that are really supporting their emergence and their good qualities. So it's a really powerful exercise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. You mentioned another one called Lifeline. And tell us what that's about. How is that structured?
So this one is also really powerful. So I take young people, it's kind of this guided visualization, lights are turned down, there's really like moving music, and I kind of loosely take them through just this structure of one's life, say, you know, in their early ages, and then elementary school, junior high, and possibly high school, and they're kind of visualizing the memories that they really can hold on to. And then once we've gone through that guided visualization, the lights are turned on, and they're prepped a little bit beforehand, but they have two different colored cards, and one of them are high points and the other one are low points. And so they take usually just about like 10 of each of the cards, and they start writing down those particular high and low points for themselves. And the one part of the side will just be almost like this poetic kind of one, two word title of what happened. And then they'll do a larger summary on the back side of the page, and they don't put their names on it. And they fill these out, and then they go up to just a large kind of easel board, or, it could be like a very long pieces of paper that is structured from age 0 to say 18. And they place the different cards based off of the ages that they experience these different things. And then once everybody has done that, they return to their seats, and then they go back up, and they just, in total silence, this exercise is done in total silence, they are able to look at, you know, just the collective experience of everybody, the highs and lows. And the whole exercise itself is very moving. It brings a lot of folks, you know, to really emotional places sometimes. So this is why it's important that, you know, there's a large discussion afterwards.
Sure.
But also brings a lot of awareness of what other people are going through. And it just always has a big impact.
Oh, yeah, I can easily imagine that from, you know, based on activities that I've been through and, you know, in my career, both as a participant and as a leader.
Mm.
Do you have a sense of what the ideal number of girls in such a group is? What's the group size?
Ideally, you know, no more than 12, no less than 6.
Okay.
But I have done this in classrooms filled with, you know, almost 30 students.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is enough safety and just respect, you can do this in, you know, large groups as well.
Yes. The second section is called empathetic attunement.
Right.
What's that? It kind of says what it's about, but what more do you want to add?
Right. Just, yes, it's a building of empathy, but it's also just showing how people see things differently, right? Not right or wrong, you know, but that they see things differently. And so it gives a more multi-layered lens of, like, you know, taking things out of dichotomies of good and bad, right and wrong, right? And being able to see things more with more complexity. And from that place, they're able to make wiser decisions. So it's really just really hammering in that reality that, you know, to be able to see another person's reality and also that two contradictory things can exist at the same time. And it's a very sophisticated idea, but young people are absolutely able to understand it, right? That two things can exist that are in what seems like the total contradiction to each other, and yet they can both still be true.
Okay. It looks like you've got about 8 or 9 activities in this section. Is there one that stands out for you?
They're all like, why are you doing this, Dr. Dave?
Just one at random then.
I think in defense of vulnerability is a good one, because it really identifies defensive patterns that people have, and I think particularly teenagers, so they really see themselves in the way that they communicate and how it's a defensive mechanism. And so I think that it's a really good tool. And it gives you also ways of being able to communicate something without all that defensiveness. I don't know. Fishbowl is really powerful. It's an opportunity for, and it could be a, you know, demographic of girls to really speak their truth without having any opinions or feedback coming back. And I think that can be really powerful as well. There's a whole bunch of really good ones in this one.
Oh, yeah. And then the next section, kind of moving along, is necessary action. And that's an interesting idea. What are you getting at there?
Well, just that, I mean, once this kind of concentric evolution of, say, empathy, that it's not maybe not enough just to have empathy, but that it requires action. And so this is really requiring the girls to be change agents in their environment, in their media environment, and why that's important. And so it's exposing them to issues of girls and women globally, and then ways in which they can activate their talents and interests, and just their concerns in really meaningful ways.
I see one of the activities here is random acts of kindness, and there's a part one and part two, and I love the notion of random acts of consciousness, and of course, positive psychology also grabbed hold of that idea in a very powerful way.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between random acts of kindness part one and part two?
It's a stepping stone. So the random act of kindness part one is really just initiating one simple act of kindness for, say, a stranger, or it could be somebody close to them, with no need for any kind of retribution or, you know, anything. And so just enacting that in their environment. But the part two is really where, as a collective, the group initiates a larger action, right? And so it's about them doing something maybe within their community, or if they're, and they collectively decide what they're going to work on, if it's something globally that they want to work on, but it's doing it as a group. So it has larger ramifications.
Yeah, great. And then the fifth one is sacred living. So tell us a bit about sacred living. I see a bunch of activities under that as well.
Right. This is a really special one, just like I said before, because it's really introducing the idea of, for lack of a better word, spirituality and social emotional education. And this is, so of course, we're really exploring values in this this piece. It's exposing them to mindfulness and gratitude. But then it goes beyond that and really starts, and this is kind of where it starts getting more, this is more indigenous thought and in some ways Jungian, but really being able to be in relation with the world. So this is just a communion with nature, and just doing some really deep work around that. It's also being able to look at the world symbolically, and just as if you are in dialogue with the world, and then exposing them to a lot of like an interfaith exploration of different spiritual concepts, and not to convince them that they need to embrace any of them, but almost as a philosophical exploration of these are the different ideas that are out there. And then they do this, actually a couple pieces on just really doing exercises around these big existential questions, and exploring some of the responses in their environment and within themselves around these, like, kind of just these bigger issues. And there's also some pieces around intuition and accessing that. And finally, just, you know, beginning to establish what is sacred for them. And they get to define that.
I'm wondering if you ever have in these groups, quotes, hard cases, girls who are really resistant to doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah. There are always at least one or two in a group. And I mean, I think that's real and authentic. And this is, none of this is about convincing them to do it. It's always providing the space for them, you know, for them to explore it. And if they don't feel comfortable doing that, then that's okay too. It's interesting though, because I've been doing pieces like this for 17 years. I have girls that are, and actually boys and girls, but males and females, coming to me years later. And you know, they're like, they have families now and careers, and these were, some of them were very resistant at the time, and just how much that, you know, some of the things that I put forward, you know, it really stuck with them. So I, you know,
wow. that's got to be, feel so good when that happens.
Yeah. So I remember that when I do hear that resistance, because it's about seeds, you know, and just planting some stuff, and some of it will grow and some of it won't.
Yeah. That's the attitude I always had in my teaching as well.
Yeah.
And the last section is a closing ritual, but I'm not going to ask you to reveal that, because I think, you know, I think the power is in the experience.
Yes.
And so we'll just let people be curious about that. Now, you're working in Oakland, and I don't know, we've got listeners off and on in as many as 195 countries, and I don't think I have 195 countries listening to every episode, but at one point or another, we've had at least one person from 195 countries. So a lot of people might not have a sense of you're working in Oakland, and they may not have imagery around that, because I live in the area, and also Oakland is a high-profile community, I think, in the U.S. generally, as one of the urban centers that has been a hot spot for racial kinds of troubles. And you and I were comparing some notes before the interview began, and I noticed from, you know, the pictures I saw of you on YouTube and so on, that we were comparing that we both come from mixed race families, that you have a European mother and an African American father, and I had an African American stepdad and European mother, and so I at least grew up in that sort of family. And my sister she's my half sister, and so she was a product of that marriage. So we share in common some experience with that sort of thing, and we both traveled high and traveled low, if you will. So I guess I'm wanting you to talk somewhat about your own experience and about what it is working in this community of Oakland, which in itself is in transition. I mean, it's it started out as a very white community, I think. Then it became a very African American. Now a lot of white people are moving back because the rents are so high in San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah. So let's just explore that dimension a bit.
Yeah. I love Oakland. It's interesting that it's just been depicted as such a, you know, a hotbed of violence. I think there's a lot of really, really beautiful things that have happened there and are happening there. And you're right that it's incredibly gentrified right now, which is bringing, you know, its own issues with it, and its own racial tensions, because Oakland has historically been really just a radical center. And it's just, you know, it's the foundation of the Black Panther movement, and just some really incredible things have come out there. And so there's just this kind of progressive politic that exists there, but it's just intersecting now with gentrification and this kind of flight in from San Francisco into Oakland. I think working there has been interesting. I'm going to say also just specifically in the public schools, because there's, I feel like, more of an allowance to do some pretty, you know, more progressive progressive things within the school. So for instance, and I talked about this a little bit before, the program that we did, and this was during the school day, my co-partner, he taught radical social theory. So he was teaching folks from deep East Oakland about the nature of oppression and about misogyny and homophobia and sexual terrorism, and just really breaking down these ideas in ways that they could digest and really understand. And I think it was important because, you know, young people around, they're not giving context to what's going on around them, and they can assume, as I think a lot of people do, that it's just the community, you know, and that might just be Black folks or whatever. But when somebody's educated and politicized around why there are certain factors in a particular community, especially if it's your community, you become more empowered. And I don't know many schools, at, you know, in public education that would allow that to exist in the school day. And I was also doing this social emotional component, but I was bringing in the last 3 years this spiritual component. We had spiritual elders from different spiritual traditions, mm-hmm, in dialogue with the students. Just the students could ask them any question, and they sometimes would fight back, and it was just it was super an incredible place in some ways to work, because there was a flexibility in the pedagogy there. And so I've been really fortunate, but it's, like you said, it's changing.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the groups that you've run, were they, did they tend to be racially mixed or homogenous or?
Yeah, this is what was so amazing about the program, was that, absolutely racially mixed, and not even too much of, I don't necessarily think that there was one race and ethnicity that was dominant, but a complete mixture of that, also of social class. So we had some students from the Hills and then others from deep East Oakland. We also even just different learning abilities. So we had a lot of folks from AP classes, and then we would have kids from special ed. I mean, and so it was, wow, just such a rich environment. Right? You can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you were mentioning what Oakland's known for, I was remembering it was also a major rap music center, right? That wasn't the West Coast kind of hub of rap.
Yeah, I think, I think L.A. would disagree.
Okay.
Yeah. But I definitely think that there were some pillars that came out of Oakland for sure. Yes.
Yeah. So where are you going to go from here? Do you have, for example, do you have another book in you, or do you have any other grand plans, vision for the future?
I think I want to do, you know, some work around really doing some trainings and workshops around this book. And I just, this larger push of getting, we didn't really talk about it too much, but just getting more spiritual themes and social emotional education. There's just so much research now around the protective factors of spirituality, and we probably would have to define that. But a lot of people are very reticent around introducing it for really good reasons, but I just think it's time, and it's a perfect crucible in the life stage to really introduce it. And so I feel like right now that's my activism in some ways is around that. And then, yes, I think eventually in about a year or two, I do have a book coming out of me. And it's more for children, so elementary school age, but very similar to this, of just, you know, creating more social emotional education, but also with this kind of spiritual component with it.
I forgot to ask you if you have kids yourself.
I don't. I've been totally surrounded by young people my entire life with no children. So yeah. I am a mother to many.
Well, I was having a vision for you as you were talking, imagining you doing some international work, because the kinds of issues that you're talking about and the sorts of urban challenges that you've been dealing with exist in many places around the world. And I could think of you. Have you ever thought about that?
No, that's the dream, right? Uh-huh. So if I could make that happen, I mean, and partially because I'm so enriched by other cultures, and I do think that this could benefit a lot of different communities around the world. So yes, that, I mean, ideally, if I could make that happen, I would love to do that.
Well, I have a lot of listeners in Australia, the UK, New Zealand, so and there are many therapists and so on in those three countries. So I'll just plant that seed. Speaking of seeds,
and I will water it.
Yeah, and you had said before we got onto the interview proper that you might have some questions at me, not at me, for me.
Well, we were kind of talking about our childhood, you know, growing up, and yeah. And just being raised by your step-grandfather, I mean, your father, yeah. who really was your father, right?
Yeah. And psychologically, yes.
Right. And just, you lived in the Crenshaw area, and I was thinking that we might get into a conversation about that, what that was like for you. But that might be a whole nother segment.
Yeah, it probably would be a whole nother segment. And I'm trying to think of something that I can say right now, though, to not kind of dodge this. We were talking about how the Crenshaw area actually has changed from the time that I grew up and the time that you lived in, you know, that you knew about that area. You grew up in Santa Monica, and I loved going to Santa Monica and the beach. You were talking about how important the ocean was to you, and it was similarly important to me. And when I went away to college, it was like, for as much as, you know, sort of being homesick, I pined for the Pacific Ocean. I missed, mm-hmm. you know, I really missed being by the ocean, and always wanted to live by the ocean. And I would say that, you know, my growing up and we lived in, there was sort of, moved around a lot because of the racial composition of my family probably was a factor. My parents had a difficult marriage, so they were on and off a lot, and I got shipped off to my grandmother's house for long periods of time way on the other side of town. And so all of that, of course, had an impact on me. But I suppose one of the impacts relevant to Shrink Wrap Radio here is a sense of the ability to travel from one community to another that I lived in. I said living high, living low. You know, I lived in the sort of the L.A. ghetto area for much of my life. We also lived in Hollywood and went to school with movie stars. And so that kind of varied experience, I think, has made me someone who can rather easily take different points of view and put myself in other people's shoes and be empathic. And so that's a lot of what Shrink Wrap Radio is about, because I venture so widely across a lot of boundaries.
Yeah, and I imagine also with that kind of, like, it's more nuanced intimacy, you know, about a community, that even like the framing of the high and the low, right, that you understand that that low point there's incredible richness.
Oh yeah.
Right. And,
yeah,
and
definitely
depth. And so, like, and that's, you know, I think that's a pretty unique experience for a white male to be able to really know that.
Yeah, and there's some pain in it, because I think that, and I think this happens to African-American people as well, that going on in education and excelling in education can then be an isolating thing. And so, for example, I don't have any African-American friends at this point in my life, and I miss that. Mm-hmm. But it, going off to school and then to more school and then to more school,
yeah.
Despite my best intentions, it kind of created a little bit of a wedge.
Yeah, I experienced that in higher education. I think I was like one of two people of color. And I hear that even with students in high school that they could enter into AP programs, but they feel so culturally isolated that they don't want to be in them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think these are big pieces that form us.
Yeah. 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 So I kind of miss that side of my life and my personality.
Yeah.
And feel a little bit of guilt at the same time. Part of me was eager to escape into the world of privilege, of white privilege, mm-hmm. to get out of that environment. And at the same time, I miss some of the old stuff and have a little bit of guilt about it.
Yeah. I think it's so much deeper than this, but I think that is part of, we talk about white privilege, but Frary talks about that, that there is a shadow to that privilege, and it's an emptiness in some ways, right? Like, and I think you're expressing parts of that, like of not just being really connected to all parts of ourselves, and, mm-hmm. and that means all communities.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, you got a lot out of me there. The process works. So unless you've got something else you want to add, this might be a good place for us to wrap it up for today.
I think so, too.
Okay. Well, Urena Jackson, I want to thank you for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
It was a pleasure.
I really enjoyed speaking with Urena Jackson. At this particular time of interracial conflict here in the U.S., Urena Jackson's is a down-to-earth voice of sanity, wisdom, and healing. I think she's been doing such important work with young people. I especially like the way she brings depth psychology perspectives into her work with girls in such a natural and non-preachy way. As you heard, her book is loaded with 40-some group exercises that have proven to move teens into a more introspective and soulful relationship with themselves, with other members of their group, and even out into the community. If you're a group leader or a parent of one or more teens, this book will be a wonderful resource. The title of her book says it all. I highly recommend Girls Rising, A Guide to Nurturing a Confident and Soulful Adolescent by Urena Jackson. As always, you're encouraged to use the Amazon.com widget in our right-hand sidebar on shrinkwrapradio.com.
Hi, I'm Heather. I'm a graduate student, and I was really excited to stumble upon Shrink Wrap Radio and an article with an author whose articles I've been reading recently. It was very cool to hear. I chose to send a contribution to Shrink Wrap Radio because I really want to support this kind of grassroots educational initiative that's being done. I made a small contribution, and I figure, for every, I gain something from it by listening to it, and I would like to support that being out there for other people to hear, and I just, it's a really cool thing that you guys are doing, and so thank you.
Heather, thanks for that message. I'm so glad you discovered Shrink Wrap Radio and find it worth supporting. I'm sure you'll inspire others to follow your excellent example. Unfortunately, we have no new donors since the last episode, but hope springs eternal. Because of the poor quality of our Skype connection today, I wasn't able to do a video interview with Urena Jackson, which is too bad because she's particularly photogenic. However, lots of other recent interviews have included a full video version as well as an excerpt from the interview. You can find these at youtube.com/shrinkwrapradio, all one word. I see we already have 66 subscribers. Thank you, subscribers, and you can join us there too. Due to some changes at the Zur Institute, I've not been able to offer any new CE courses for some time. Of course, my courses that are there already are timeless, so please remember you can get 10% off on all the APA continuing education materials at the Zur Institute, not just the courses based on my interviews, but all of them. You can click on that banner in our left-hand sidebar or simply go to zurinstitute.com, search through their extensive catalog, and then use my discount code at checkout, which is DrDave88. That's DrDave88. How would you like to be a research subject in a study on synchronicity by a lecturer at a university in South Africa? Well, the only way you'll see that information is if you're a subscriber to our monthly newsletter. The July newsletter just went out, as a matter of fact. If you're not already a subscriber, you find the place to register in the top of the left-hand sidebar on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com. Do you know that there's a Shrink Wrap Radio app? It's available for Apple, Android, and Windows devices. You can find a link on our website. There is a tab at the top of the website that says Apps. And the app will let you access the latest 80 or so episodes, plus the ability to call our message phone, and more. It's $2.99, but it helps to cover the $30 a month that I'm paying to make it available to you all. Be sure to check our website for the various Amazon specials we're running there. Don't forget that the Amazon search widget in our right-hand sidebar can be used to search not just for books, but any product on Amazon, and we'll get a small affiliate payment when you order something that way. And finally, if you enjoy Shrink Wrap Radio, I'll bet you know other people who would like it as well. Please remember to help spread the word. It's a three-way win. You'll get the warm feeling in your whole body that comes from sharing. They'll get the gift of your generosity toward them, as well as this new world of content. And I'll get the joy of reaching a wider audience.
Hi, this is Dr. Amadeo, marriage and family therapist, international speaker, and author of Dancing with Fire, A Mindful Way to Loving Relationships. And you are on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Dr. John Amodeo, who was my guest on episode number 370, Mindfulness and Loving Relationships. Now let's go to a recent email from our listener community. It's from Timothy Voista, who writes in response to my email thanking him for becoming a Shrink Wrap Radio supporter. Tim writes, "Hi, David. Nice to hear from you. I would like to have responded to you sooner. However, I'm trying to open a private practice, and that has been a priority. I really enjoy your podcast, and you are providing a great service to the therapist community. I appreciate your show very much. I'm happy to help out. Regards, Tim." Well, Tim, I thank you for your thanks. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemail using our Shrink Wrap Radio app or by calling our message phone at 415-830-4014. Thanks to today's guest, Urena Jackson, for sharing her very inspiring work with girls. My next interview will be with Dr. Eve Merrim, a clinical and forensic psychologist and Jungian-oriented psychotherapist who has just written the book titled Psychopathy Within. If you're interested in a Jungian take on the psychopath, this will be a very fascinating show for you. So be sure to stay tuned for our Dylan-esque outro music performed by Nashville musician Jeff Smith. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long, just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, babe, it's all in your mind. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.